You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Some dogs look at you like you're insane.
Notice your dog's intelligence is different to yours.
We're killing our dogs. Wild and woolly welcome wagon.
The outside of a dog is really, really good. The inside of a person.
Centricity.
Hello and welcome to episode 86 of Dogcast Radio. In this show, we have an interview with Mick Martin of Dog Borstal fame.
But here's another bit of advice. Don't ask German Shepherd people what German Shepherds are like, because they're just going to say they're great.
We have an interview with Jim Hawkins of Radio Shropshire fame.
Comedy Dog is called Comedy Dog for a good reason. No one's quite sure what he is.
And we find out about the Native Dog Breeds Trust.
So what we're trying to do is educate the public that these breeds still exist and they've got a purpose.
But before all that, CAPS, that's the Companion Animal Protection Society, has been involved with an important and shocking court case recently. I should warn you that this interview does include discussion of some of the practices and abuses that resulted in the court case, which some dog lovers, myself included, will find upsetting. Having said that, this sort of information does need to be publicised and we do need to be inspired to support the work organisations like CAPS do. Here's CAPS President Deborah Howard to talk about the court case as well as some of the happier aspects of her work.
This case involves one of the largest USDA or United States Department of Agriculture licensed dog brokers in the United States. She's also a breeder. So what this means is that she breeds her own dogs and sells them to pet shops and over the internet. And she's also selling other breeders' dogs.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm not sure people in England, well, in Britain, will understand what a dog broker is. So what is one?
A dog broker is someone who buys dogs from breeders. And in the United States, if you're involved in commercial dog breeding, in other words, you're raising dogs for resale to pet shops, and you have over a certain number of dogs, you have to have a federal license, and that's done through the United States Department of Agriculture. At the time of our undercover employment, she had approximately 900 dogs, and she had about 300 to 400 puppies.
Now, that is mind-blowing, isn't it?
It is. And we have been collecting... we have an online complaint form for pet shop customers, and also now for internet customers, because it's very popular now to sell one's dogs over the internet.
Yes.
So we've received a lot of complaints over the years, either one she's bred or she's brokered. And we started investigating her in 1997.
Wow.
We were never able to get a hidden camera in the first time we didn't have one. And then as we started to do more media stories on her, she became more and more suspicious. And then it was almost impossible for my investigators to even get in there, let alone with a hidden camera. She'd pat them down. We did get in with a state cruelty investigator one time for about 4 hours. And then all these horrible allegations would come out of there from employees who had worked there. But she sold a lot of sick dogs, and she brokered a lot of sick dogs, and dogs, well, who had hereditary and congenital problems.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's pretty obvious, isn't it, that if you've got, what would that be, about 1,300 dogs
right.
on site, you cannot give them a good standard of life, can you?
No, it's very much, they're raised under livestock conditions, but what is so atrocious is that there were allegations that she was doing cesarean sections from a young employee who went to the local Humane Society way back in 1995 or 6. They were never proven, but she said, well, Kathy is doing C-sections without anesthesia.
Oh, my goodness.
I just said, this is too impossible to believe.
Yeah.
And then the sheriffs did go out there, but somehow she got wind of it. And at the time, she had about 500 dogs, and she managed to hide half of them, and they never did anything. They seized her records. She was supposedly selling dogs with AKC registrations, but these dogs, the records were actually from dogs who had died. So then what happened is a few years ago, people started complaining. They'd buy a dog from Kathy. They'd bring the dog back. It had a C-section, and she was doing spay neuters too. And docking and cropping, I mean, docking tails and cropping ears. Mm. And the spay and neuters wouldn't take, and then the dogs would get infected, and they might die, or then they'd get pregnant. And the C-sections were done with sedative only, no anesthesia.
Oh.
So the state issued a cease and desist order, the veterinary board did.
Hmm.
But it didn't slow her down. And people started calling us saying, we're still hearing that Kathy's doing C-sections. Can't you get somebody in there to work?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we didn't manage to do so at the time. And then a local groomer and her niece took jobs there, basically to show that she was still doing these things. And sure enough, Kathy did a C-section or two. She did a spay-neuter while they were there. More atrociously, she delivered a puppy that was born with its intestines on the outside and smashed it against a pole to kill it.
Oh, it's as you say, it's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. Well, guess what? She got away with one charge of the illegal practice of veterinary medicine for administering penicillin. The cruelty charge for killing the puppy was dropped. She ends up with one plea bargain charge. And, of course, those women that worked there didn't write reports. They called in their evidence every day to the authorities. They didn't have a hidden camera. Mm. And shortly thereafter, our investigator showed up and embarked on 6 weeks of employment.
Yeah, yeah. And that was what finally did it, was it?
That's what finally did it, but I don't even know if that's going to be sufficient, because what is so galling here is that, oh my goodness, he documented about 51 incidents where puppies had died, dogs had died, dogs disappeared. There's a lot of dog fights. It's a very stressful environment. And she seems to think she's a veterinarian.
Mm-hmm.
She told my investigator the dog had gashes all over its face from a fight. Clorox water, that's her solution.
Oh.
Clorox kills skin.
Yeah.
She said, just put a drop in the water. Well, you're not supposed to use any kind of, no matter how greatly it's diluted. And then she would just leave the dogs to suffer. I mean, she then wouldn't do C-sections. So the most atrocious case was this Bichon, and the dog was going into labor, and there were stillborn puppies. And then she takes clamps and she's pulling this puppy out of there. We don't know if it was still alive at the time, but she broke off the tail. She broke off the leg. And then after that, of course, all the puppies died or were dead. And then she left this dog there to seizure and hemorrhage and die over a 4-day period.
Good.
That was the felony charge.
Yeah.
She was not convicted of it because apparently the jury didn't feel there was intentional behavior. She didn't intend for the dog. She was she was very neglectful. She didn't intend for the dog to die. Yeah, I mean, she's dipping the dogs in this caustic solution, prolate Lintox, which is indicated only for cattle and swine, not for dogs.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've seen the footage, but they put the dogs, the nursing mother dogs in there. They dent their eyes in there. She doesn't provide proper protection to her for the employees. They're supposed to have their eyes covered. They're supposed to have their arms covered. And she's dunking them in this big tank. And, there's this one poor German Shepherd that's just being yanked all over the place. It was horribly, horribly abusive.
So, I mean, at the moment, where do we stand now with her? She's been...
Well, the two felony charges she was not found guilty of. There was another one, a pug with a badly infected eye, and it was taken off by her husband and killed. I mean, they don't believe in taking dogs to the vet. They take them off, they shoot them. And then after my investigator went there, a young employee came forward and said they were using a kill box. So she had a box, a very basic, rudimentary box. And she hooked up a four-wheel vehicle of some sort to it, an ATV or something. I can't remember what it was. And she's killing them off with carbon monoxide, which is very cruel.
Yeah.
What's even more atrocious is that USDA demanded all of our evidence, didn't acknowledge they received it from us. They have all of our hours and hours of hidden camera footage, all of our field reports for every single day, all of our summarized reports, and they have yet to revoke her license. And she's been licensed since 1983. When one is convicted in this country and they have a USDA license, it's not an automatic revocation. Now, had she been applying for a license, she would have been denied one. But in this case, she already had one. And I think, you know, quite honestly, because we've been trying to get USDA to enforce the Animal Welfare Act, which is the federal law regulating these commercial facilities for many years, they're trying to cover their tracks. Mm-hmm. And I will be going to Washington in May and lobbying on this very case and trying to get Congress and trying to get USDA to examine why this happened. Why was this woman allowed to operate like this for so many years without any kind of impunity?
It does seem absolutely incredible. Yeah.
The woman thinks she is above the law. Let me tell you this, Julie. She was on probation, and she was serving work release while committing these atrocities in front of our investigator.
Yeah.
So she had about 10 days of work release, and she'd go to the jail at night and come back during the day and continue to abuse these animals.
Oh.
What is wrong with that picture?
I know. Oh, that... It
doesn't say very much for our judicial system. I'm thankful that she was prosecuted at all, because I should share with the audience that this is such a rare event that any type of USDA facility would be convicted, let alone even charged with any kind of animal cruelty. These are all in rural communities where local law enforcement is very hesitant to get involved, because oftentimes they go to church with that person or know that person. That's been our experience in many other cases.
Mm-hmm.
And usually USDA will intervene. They don't want to be made to look bad. They want to protect their licensee. And so the excuse that local law enforcement will use is, well, this is a federally licensed facility, and it's really the jobs of the federal government and USDA to do something about it. What I should explain is that USDA has administrative authority only. So they can't convict somebody of cruelty. They don't have the ability to seize dogs. I mean, that's all done through state cruelty laws and through local law enforcement, such as sheriffs and so forth.
But they can take back the license?
They can take back, they can take away a license. It's a long, slow process. It rarely happens.
Yeah.
Here's what's scary. Let's say USDA revokes her license. She'll still be able to sell over the internet. Has no regulation.
Yeah.
Now, they are proposing a couple variations on a state inspection program in the state of Minnesota, whereby if one is convicted of cruelty, you are not allowed to have a state license. So that would take care of that.
Yeah.
We have no way of knowing if this is going to get through the legislature. It hasn't in previous years. But, of course, she could move to another state.
Yeah.
She could say, well, I'm no longer the owner. You know, my husband's the owner. My daughter's the owner. I don't think she should be allowed to transfer ownership to other family members. And I think the only, the only acceptable sentence here, and she will be sentenced on the 24th, and she was convicted of 4 misdemeanor counts of cruelty and torture. But the only acceptable sentence here is that I don't even quite honestly care about how many days she spends in jail, but, you know, the more the better, obviously. But I don't think this is a woman who's going to learn her lesson. And it might be better if she's away in jail for a while, because I don't think the facility would be able to operate without her presence. However, I think that during the period of her probation, she and her immediate family who run the kennel should be completely banned from any kind of breeding operation.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, not just with this operation, but with all the establishments that CAPS is looking at, you must have a huge fight on your hands.
It is a huge fight. It is. It is.
And the odds seem to be stacked against you, don't they?
Well, it certainly seems that way. It's just because we don't get much cooperation, like I said, from local law enforcement. In fact, we've had lack of cooperation from humane organizations that have police power and are allowed to seize animals or go onto premises or even have good relationships with local law enforcement. I think this is mostly because these facilities are in agricultural communities. And the attitude there is that these dogs are nothing more than livestock. And you know, that's not a good justification, because you're not supposed to treat cows and pigs and sheep like this either.
No, no. But when you think, I always think, when you look at your dog or dogs,
right,
and you see, you know, the relationship you can build with them, the little brain in that head, the intelligence they've got, the personality they've got, they are not, you know, sheep,
right,
or cows. You know, they are more intelligent, they are capable of, mm-hmm, you know, so much more. They shouldn't even, you know, even in what would be a good situation for, you know, cattle, sheep, a dog shouldn't live like that.
No.
It's
no.
mad.
Actually, pigs are supposedly more intelligent,
yes,
than dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess from what I hear, pot-bellied pigs make great pets. But
yeah, I've heard that. You can clicker-train pigs, can't you? You can click them.
Dogs are social creatures.
Mm.
Dogs need interaction. They've been so highly domesticated. They need interaction and socialization.
Yeah.
You cannot lock, I don't care how clean the facility is, I don't care if they're in complete compliance with the Animal Welfare Act regulations, you cannot raise them in commercial conditions and expect to have a happy, well-adjusted dog.
No, no.
And they're not going to produce good puppies.
No.
Dogs need socialization, they need interaction with each other, they need interaction with people, they need positive reinforcement, they need exercise, and you know, leaving them in cages to do nothing but produce puppies is not psychologically beneficial to any dog.
No, no. Deborah, you've said a lot of things that I'm sure will have horrified, like myself, dog owners listening. You know, mm-hmm, as I say, you look at your own dog and you think, oh my goodness, this is so wrong. What can we do, the people that are listening, what can we do to help support CAPS?
Well, if you live in the United States, go on our website, caps-web.org, and go under, you know, USDA. We have a section on there. I want everybody to write to USDA.
Mm-hmm.
So there is pressure on this agency.
Yeah.
And write to your congressman and write to your state legislators in Minnesota, if you live in Minnesota, and ask them to pass one of these state laws requiring state licensing and inspection.
So the best thing is go to your website and
right,
follow the guidance there.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
We're awaiting the sentencing. Here's the unfortunate thing. Her defense is trying to argue that these dogs are quote-unquote breeding stock. Now, under the laws of Minnesota, there's a definition of a companion animal. So for cruelty purposes, a dog is usually considered a companion animal.
Oh.
And therefore can be seized once the person convicted of the felony is actually convicted. So in this case, what really pains me is, even with all of the documentation we had, these dogs were not initially seized. And they should have been.
Oh.
Because there were 900 dogs, and I know she's killing them off, and here's what else is going on. She's taking them. She took 200 dogs, crammed them into a truck and trailer, and drove them 16 hours, or her husband and maybe some associates, to an auction, an Amish auction in Holmes County, which is all Amish in Ohio. And the rescue people paid high prices for these dogs, which actually is unfortunate.
Mm.
She plans to sell 200 more dogs.
Oh,
she's getting rid of them, and then she sold only the best. I mean, she's taking, I am positive, she's probably taking other dogs and having her husband destroy them.
Mm.
Because
yeah,
that's what I heard was happening. I don't think they're killing them with carbon monoxide, because the authorities came and took this kill box away, but I'm sure they're taking out the ones and shooting them. So the sentencing is coming up on the 24th, but so far they have not seized her dogs because of this argument by the defense that the dogs are breeding stock. There's no such definition under the laws of Minnesota. There's a definition of livestock, and the dogs don't fall under that definition in the state of Minnesota.
No.
So what her defense is basically trying to do is legislate. And I don't see how they should be allowed to get away with that.
No.
Plus, you know, quite honestly, She's selling dogs at an auction to rescue people who are in turn placing them in homes. And so that, to me, is a companion animal.
Mm.
She also takes dogs that she doesn't want anymore, and she sells them through the newspaper. So those dogs are companion animals. So she can't really have it both ways.
No, no.
My real concern is that she's going to still be allowed to sell over the internet, even if she loses her USDA license.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I have no idea why it's taking USDA this long to revoke her license. But like I said, I am going to Washington in early May, and this case is going to be the one that is going to be the focal point of our visit.
Yeah. Well, best of luck with that, Deborah. To finish on a sort of, you know, a more upbeat note.
Yes.
You do have successes. You know, your work makes a lot of difference. Can you tell us about the success story that you had in Los Angeles?
Yes. So we have a wonderful West Coast director, Carol Davis. She's an actress. She's an author. She has a great blog. She's quite an activist, and she's been very, very strong in doing pet shop protests in Los Angeles. She was at the forefront of getting some of these pet shops to go humane, the most recent being Elaine's Pet Depot. And the Pet Depot is actually a chain, and each chain has a different name depending on the owner.
Oh.
But there's some leeway there. Some sell puppies, and some don't, and some have just rescue animals. And so Elaine wasn't convinced at first. Her manager at the store convinced her it would be the right thing to do, because Carol and her group, a very dedicated group of activists, were out there protesting. So, Carol managed to get a great local rescue organization involved. And now what is happening is that Elaine's Pet Depot is offering rescue animals only.
Brilliant.
And that's so necessary. I mean, Los Angeles has so many unwanted animals. There's so many animals being euthanized at local shelters. It's a very, very serious issue there. And, a lot of times you have to look at why do pet shops sell animals. It's because they want to sell the supplies. So if you have a rescue organization in there making animals available for adoption, you still can sell the supplies.
Yeah.
Plus you get a lot of recognition and publicity from going humane.
Yeah.
And so we've developed this model for stores to go humane, and we're hoping, other stores are going to follow suit.
I hope so too. I love the fact that all the work that CAPS does is a direct result of one woman's determination to help companion animals get the treatment they deserve. Deborah Howard and CAPS are a force for good, and they need our support. You can follow the link on the Dogcast Radio site to caps-web.org. The US has the highest dog population in the world, with France having the second highest. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Kate.
And I'm Nick. Living with a dog can be dangerous. Research by the US Centers for Disease Control and Prevention showed that 88% of people requiring treatment for fall-related injuries had fallen over their dog or cat. Intriguingly, women were more than twice as likely as men to fall over a pet. Those figures might lead you to wonder whether it's safer to live with a cat or a dog. The good news is that it's probably a dog. While both species carry a variety of germs, dogs don't carry toxoplasmosis, and a cat bite, though rarer, is more likely to become infected.
So, as long as you avoid falling over your dog, you should be all right. And now to some really dangerous dogs. Often, being overly aggressive can be a death sentence for a dog, but a prison in Idaho, USA, has been providing an alternative since 1986. Since that time, 24 what are termed mean dogs have been in residence between two perimeter fences. The dogs in question were all taken from death row at shelters and defend their territory ferociously. Thus, dogs branded too aggressive to live have been given a second chance and are successfully carrying out a much-needed job. Officials at the prison say the dogs are not affected by power cuts, are more efficient than humans, and are even effective in adverse weather conditions.
All in all, that's pretty good. And guess what? In the 23 years the dogs have been patrolling the fences, not a single inmate has successfully escaped, and none have even tried since the early 1990s. So clearly, some dogs labelled dangerous can be useful. However, some can be a nuisance, thanks to their owners. In the UK, police have proposed putting laws in place to ban thugs from owning attack dogs. Rather than being breed-specific legislation, this would be person-specific, with any gang members banned from taking their dog to areas known for dogfighting. Dogs have been used, in effect, as weapons by some gangs, and the problem is getting worse according to police figures, which isn't good for humans or for dogs.
And, talking of breed-specific legislation, Bognor, a town in the UK, is totally against this.
Yes, Bognor just wants to ban all dogs. The council is proposing to ban dogs from all public spaces, and not surprisingly, the Kennel Club is urging dog owners to voice their disapproval of the proposed ban.
On the other side of the world, an even more surprising ban on dogs may soon be in place. The row has broken out about the use of dogs to herd sheep in New Zealand into abattoirs. This practice, it has been claimed, is too stressful for the sheep, although presumably not half as stressful as what happens to them once inside. In some cases, dogs have already been replaced by humans with rattles, although it has been argued that this may well be more stress-inducing than the dogs.
And talking about stress, an Australian dog recently found herself in an extremely worrying situation. Sophie Tucker, an Australian cattle dog, fell overboard from her owner's yacht off the coast of Australia. When she failed to turn up again, her owners resigned themselves to never seeing her again. However, Sophie herself was undeterred. She somehow managed to swim 6 miles through shark-infested water to St. Bees Island, where she lived wild, fending for herself by hunting young goats. Islanders spotted the dog and reported her to rangers, and now, happily, she is back at home with her very surprised owners.
We've heard some shaggy dog stories on this programme, but that one takes some beating.
Or maybe, as those goats Sophie lived off might say, that story takes some bleating. And that's all from us on the Dogcast News Desk. Goodbye.
The number one health problem among dogs is obesity. While we were at Crufts, I spotted the familiar figure of Mick Martin of Dog Borstal renown. Now on the show, Mick is a very stern, strict trainer. But in real life, he was charming. He was at Crufts for a really great cause.
Well, I'm here today to help Support Dogs UK, which is a charity that helps disabled people live better lives, really, by using the dogs that they've trained to help them in a number of different ways. That can come anything from picking articles up that the owner's dropped to alerting them if they're going to have a seizure. The way I got involved was that I was doing an interview similar to this last year at Crufts. There was a bit of a commotion, and to be honest, me being me, I told them all to shut up. Then I went and found out what it was. A small dog with the lady, and it had an injury to its pad. While it was being treated on the veterinary table, it alerted the lady that she was about to have a seizure. Now, I've seen some stuff in my time. Explosives abroad, you know, when I've trained in the Middle East. I've seen police work. I've trained police dogs. I've detected drugs. I'll tell you now, I've never seen anything like that. There was people crying and all sorts. So after that, what else could you do that but say next year I'll be here for 4 days? If I can do anything during the year, I'll do my best. I did the Windsor show, and now I'm doing Kennel Club Crufts. And it's great to just raise their profile. It costs between £10,000 and £15,000 to train each dog. They've been going for 16 years now, and you know, they've trained quite a lot of dogs. You know, I think it's 140 or 150 dogs. They're totally dedicated to what they do. They're a small organisation, which is why I like them. And if I can just get a few bob their way by doing what I do, then it's got to be worth it.
Yeah, definitely. I think the thing with the dogs is they do these amazing things. They have these abilities to detect things, but they stay a dog, don't they? You know, they're very much a natural dog. They still have all those behaviours.
Exactly. I think the thing that I've been sort of famous for is really I love working with dogs. I've always worked dogs. The people that I train, we try and get them to maybe do some sort of sport or some sort of activity where the dog's mind is being challenged. Where you have a dog that hasn't got a job to do, what you'll find is he'll go self-employed. And when you go self-employed as a dog, it usually means, you know, bad news for the owner. So give it a job and you'll have a great dog.
Yeah. They do love, I mean, we have this idea as a human, you know, I like to veg out on the sofa and that's it. But dogs do love to have a purpose. And of course, these dogs, the support dogs, the assistance dogs, have a great life because they have company, they have good medical care, don't they? They have a good standard of life, don't they?
Yeah, they're totally well looked after. You know, like our police dogs, you know, we have all round good quality medical care, we have the best food, we have the best training, and exactly the same as support dogs, only a different role. But what you see is that the dog's totally fulfilled in what it does because it's always doing something work related. And you can see the dogs on the stands here over the next 3 days at Croft. Come and have a chat with the people who are actually working their dogs. They've got their working dogs with them. You're allowed to touch them, you're allowed to stroke them and all the rest. But bottom line is, if it's one of the seizure alert dogs and anything's about to happen, he goes straight back into work mode. And when you've seen it live, as it were, you know, it moves you to tears sometimes. Even the tough guy off the telly, you know, I've got to say, it was really amazing when I saw it.
Yeah. So what sort of, people have been coming to you with problems this morning, haven't they? So what sort of problems have you been solving?
Well, we get all sorts of questions. The difference with what I've normally do at Crofts is just talk to people. I'm doing a bit of a stand and deliver. If you want any answers, then you've got to chuck some money in the bucket. So, you know, we're all doing well out of it. So I'll try and do my best, you know. A lot of the behavioural problems, it's got to be said, it's easier if I can actually see the dog, because what I've heard this morning is bordering on a bit of the old ridiculous again, you know. My dog's in bed and he's hugging the pillows, so that's not the sort of problem I want to deal with, but, you know, I'll give him some advice. Why don't you sleep downstairs and let the dog have the bed? You know, that's the way it is. All sorts of food guarding, you know, excessive pulling on the lead. You can't really explain all those things on a face-to-face. It'd be so much easier if you could see the dog and you could probably solve it quite quickly. My advice, you know, to all your listeners is really, if you have problems, try and find yourself some decent trainers. There's a lot of good people out there who are willing to help. Get some advice early and don't let the problem get out of hand till it becomes so hard no one's going to be able to help you.
Yeah.
If you can get early advice, you're going to be able to change the dog round. And, you know, it's a cliche, but a trained dog is a happy dog.
Absolutely.
And so you're going to have a better life yourself.
Yeah. Now, people in your area can come to you for that kind of a training ongoing, can't they? So tell us about what you do. How do you train?
Okay, I have two companies. I do Hertfordshire Dog Training School, which is based in Watford. We also have a branch in Stevenage. We run classes mostly in Stevenage. We run classes every day of the week. We have 6 full-time trainers. I'm just one of the trainers, and it's got to be said that I've gone from running 10 classes down to just doing one. I have my diehard group that have been with me now for a long time. They do sports-related type training. We see new people every week. We have 2 behaviourists, Richard, who's also on Dog Borstal, the judge, who actually only knows one colour, the colour yellow. Never gives me a red. But he's my associate. We run 2 clubs together. So he's a qualified behaviourist, so he does all the behavioural consultations. I tend to chip in when I think it's not going right.
Yeah.
And I also run a company which is called K9 Effects, which is training dogs for films and television, which is now perhaps my main role. Last year I did Batman, you know, which was the largest job I've ever done. You know, it's 8 police dogs, lots of action, lots of guns, all the rest of it. And then shortly after that, I did the new Harry Potter, where I had people I met at Crofts last year ended up working for me within 6 months.
Yeah.
We had 4 Rottweilers that were here at Crofts working on the new Harry Potter film. So fantastic.
Excellent. It's nice to see you here doing such a good job at Crofts.
Yes, this is a different year for me. I've been coming every year, you know, and I usually wander around watching people buying strange things for their dogs. Clothing for dogs, you know.
Yes.
It's got to be said, I'm not a fan.
No.
But there's some good stuff and there's a lot of advice you can get here.
Yeah.
I said many times, come to Crofts to find out what it's like to own certain breeds. But here's another bit of advice. Don't ask German Shepherd people what German Shepherds are like, because they're just going to say they're great. I'm going to say they're fantastic. You know, I'm going to say Staffords are the best dog that you could probably get. But why don't you ask the people who have a different dog what they think, the experts, what they think of the other breed? Well, you know, they've got this problem, they've got that. They'll probably get to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
We're all biased to our own breeds, and everyone knows I'm a Shepherd fan, everyone knows I'm a Stafford fan. But, you know, I'm perhaps not a Mexican Mouse fan. Sorry, did I say that? I meant Chihuahua. So you wouldn't ask me for advice about a Chihuahua because I'm just going to tell you that I don't like them. But they might be the best dog in the world. So ask one of the experts, ask one of the breeders and find out some information. Health and welfare, you can't get a better amount of information than here. You can find out everything from worming your dog to other health matters. The Kennel Club do a great job. No matter what people think of the Kennel Club and their, you know, their recent documentary, they've done a lot of good research into health and welfare of dogs over the years. When I first started the instructor's course with the Kennel Club, you know, I learned a lot from them. So go and see them, they're going to give you some great advice. This year, on another note, there's a bit of controversy because of the documentary. There's some plan that some activists are going to let dogs run around. Again, if anyone's listening who's thinking of doing that, let's think about this sensibly. It's not the dog's fault. The people who are in charge of the dogs have maybe done something you don't like. If you want to demonstrate, do it outside. Canvas people, get some reactions, talk to them, talk to your politicians, talk to people in the know, come and talk to me if you like. I'll give you a straightforward answer, but don't take it out on the dogs. Don't start letting dogs out here who are going to just run around, get confused and suffer for it.
Yeah.
You can have a go at the breeders as much as you like. And there are some breeders that I'll be standing next to you, but generally, do not have a go at dogs because you don't like what the Kennel Club are doing.
Yeah. I think as well at Croft, you get to see the other things that the Kennel Club is doing, like the Good Citizen scheme, you know, like the Young Handler scheme, the Safe and Sound. They do a lot more than just showing, don't they?
The reason I like Crofts is, it's got to be said, I don't really come here to watch the show dogs. I come to watch the dogs doing stuff.
Yeah.
And the Kennel Club do five great sports. They do the working trials, which is the one I do, field trials, competition agility, competition obedience and the fly ball. So there's five really top sports and you can watch all the finals here. You can see dogs really doing well. The other thing you can see is young handlers out there training obedience, training their dogs at a really, really top high standard. These are the trainers of the future, if you like. The boring stuff for me is watching dogs being groomed and standing on a pedestal, you know. But that's probably why they're allowed to do it. The Kennel Club do a lot of different things. So come and watch dogs doing stuff. That's why I'm here as well. I get a lot of good tips. And if you've got a dog, perhaps teach it some obedience, teach it some tricks. The other thing that's here is my favourite of all time, which is freestyle, sometimes called doggy dancing. Now, I've got a very good friend, Danelda, who is one of the world's top doggy dancing champions. She teaches a lot of people, and she wanted me to dress in army camouflage with my border collie with a bandana on. And I said, Danelda, I've done a lot of things in my life, but that isn't going to be one of them.
That would have raised money, though, Mick.
I think if I'd had to do it for support dogs, I probably would have said, you know, I'll bite the bullet here and do it. But, you know, I just can't do it.
Maybe next year.
If Danelda's still up, she's up for training me and my colleague to do freestyle, then I'll give it a go.
Okay.
If it's going to raise awareness for support dogs and we can train another dog out of it, then great. But it's another sport.
Yeah.
So no matter what you think of people dressing up and, you know, doing that sort of thing, have a look at the dog. The dog's enjoying himself. He's enjoying what's happening. He's jumping through hoops. He's rolling over. He's basically doing competition obedience to music.
Absolutely.
Because it's the same guys. It's the guys who used to beat me in obedience are now dressing up. That's all it is. And they're having fun. And that's what I like to see.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mick.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Mick was doing a great job and gave out advice in return for donations to support dogs all 4 days of Crufts. You can find out more about him and support dogs via the links on the Dogcast Radio site. The UK Kennel Club is concerned that some breeds are declining in popularity to the point that they are endangered. The Native Dog Breeds Trust was at Crufts, and I spoke to Chairman John Breeze to find out more about the attempts to stop a number of British breeds dying out completely.
Well, a few years ago, the Kennel Club identified 20, at that time it was 28 breeds that were vulnerable, meaning that, the numbers of registrations with the Kennel Club had declined over a number of years. So a few of us, a few of the enthusiasts of these breeds, got together and formed the Trust. And what we're trying to do is actually go around the country doing other events than Discover Dogs. We do game fairs, we do fun days, we do seminars about breeding. So what we're trying to do is educate the public that these breeds still exist and they've got a purpose. A lot of them have got really deep historic links with England and Ireland. And, the Skye Terrier, for instance, is Greyfriars Bobby, the story of Greyfriars Bobby. You've got the Jack Black, the Manchester Terrier, the Rat Pits, the Queen Victoria's Rat Catcher.
Yeah.
So they are steeped in history, and what we're trying to do is make people aware that these breeds still exist. I think a lot of them have just gone out of the public eye.
Yeah.
And I think the influx of continental dogs, and there's only so many people that own dogs, so what's happened, the continental dogs have come in, and people who actually traditionally own these breeds have gone to the continental, so we're losing breeders and owners all the time. The Skye Terrier, which is the most vulnerable at the moment, only registered 28 puppies last year in comparison to a Labrador of 40-odd thousand. So, you know, we're hoping by doing these events to make people aware that they exist. Come and see them. Come and meet the owners. Come and meet, you know, sort of the dogs and get to know them, you know. So they will, hopefully, carry on for generations to come.
So, I mean, maybe now they've got quite scarce, maybe the exotic factor will work in their favour.
Well, this is what we're trying to say to people. If most of these breeds, if you walk them down the street, what's that? You know, I've never seen one of those before, especially a Skye, because they're twice as long as they are tall. So you've got this long dog with profuse hair, and people say, oh, what's that? You know, it's a long-haired dasher. No, it's a Skye Terrier. This, you know, there's a breed on this list for everyone, the miniature ETT, you know, very small dog, up to the Otterhound, which is, you know, I don't know whether you've seen one today when you've been walking around. It's quite a substantial dog, used years ago for hunting otters and mink. Okay, it hasn't got a purpose anymore, but you've still got a beautiful dog. You know, that's still, you know, get you out there walking around, you know. All I can instill is to people is come and have a look at the vulnerable breeds.
According to John, there's a vulnerable breed to suit everyone. So to find your ideal breed, visit nativebreeds.org. 70% of people sign their pet's name on greeting and holiday cards, while 58% put pets in family and holiday portraits. Jim Hawkins is one of the presenters on Radio Shropshire. He is also a Twitterer and a dog owner. Once a week after his show, he can be found sitting on a bench somewhere in Shropshire, recording conversations with the public for broadcast in his show. After listening to him and exchanging tweets, I went to meet him, sitting on a bench in Telford Park. Now, you mention comedy dog on Twitter. So, can you describe comedy dog for us?
It's not easy. Comedy dog is called comedy dog for a good reason. No one's quite sure what he is.
Yeah.
I think that somewhere in recent generations there's Dachshund and Yorkshire Terrier and Jack Russell.
Okay.
So he's about 6-7 inches high.
Oh, goodness.
And he's about 15 inches long. He's got ridiculously big ears. He's got a kind of Jack Russell nose. Because of the weirdness of his upbringing, he's got his back legs. They work fine at slow speeds, but when he's going quickly, he springs along like a rabbit with these enormous ears and a great big long tail. He's black, a bit like a Yorkie, kind of black and tan with ginger fluffy bits around his paws, and he's got this long tail that's mostly black, but there's a very pale tan stripe up the back of it, so you can see him in the dark. And he is he's very, very cute, and he's an utterly ridiculous comedy dog.
Yes. That sounds like a really feisty mix. So what's he like? You know, what's his temperament like?
Oh, he's very cute, but he's very opinionated. You know, he knows what he wants and he knows how to get it. He's very affectionate. He's a lovely dog, but if there's something he wants to do, then he's quite determined that he will make every possible effort to do it. But other than that, he's just a happy, chirpy. He looks like he's smiling. He looks like he's laughing all the time. time. He's a very happy little fellow.
Yeah, yeah. He gets that from you, I think.
Well, I don't know about that. but he's very sweet. He's 2 years old. We've done the bronze good citizen and silver good citizen. And the interesting thing is that he sees he's all right in the classes, but take him out of the classes and it's just like, okay, that's it. I'm not in the village hall anymore. All bets are off. I'll do what I want.
Yeah,
I don't
Jill's
care.
Not watching.
That's exactly. Yeah, that's it. So and I was contemplating doing gold, but frankly, I think we needed some remedial work on bronze and silver. I was kind of surprised in the silver when we did the silver good citizen. He did. It's really if he feels like doing something. Yeah. Because when we did the silver good citizen, when the exam for the silver good citizen, we did the recall. So I'm at one end of the village hall, dog was the other, and usually he's been like really good at this. Yeah. So as I call him to him, he comes hurtling across, and the ears are flapping, and he's pelting along, and he comes over. This time, and this is the only time he did it, saunters from one end of the village hall to me, pausing at the benches to wee on the bench.
Oh, no!
And it's like, nah, okay, you're not going to get the rosette, are you? But he did, luckily, which is good. But yes, so he's quite willful.
He does have a sense of humour, doesn't he?
He does have a real sense of humour, and he's assisted in the sense of humour by the two cats. I've got two cats as well. One of whom is getting a bit of an old man. He's about 12 now. But the other one is about 5. A big fat cat is about 5, and he's kind of stripy tabby. So big fat cat and comedy dog, they are huge chums. I mean, they groom each other. They sit together. They play together. Comedy dog, for example, if he wants to play, hasn't yet worked this out that this won't happen. If he wants to play, he will pick up a toy, go over to big fat cat, and give big fat cat the toy, and then look bemused as to why he doesn't get played with. And if he wants big fat cat to move around and play with him, nudge him with his nose. But there are other times where he wants to be left alone, and big fat cat just wants to play. Big fat cat just finds any number of different ways of teasing comedy dog, and he does that by finding new bits of furniture to climb on that comedy dog can't reach, because he can sit up on his back feet, but he can't jump up on anything higher than the sofa. He just kind of bounces up and down. But the zenith of this, I've just moved house, and so all three of them have been exploring the new house, trying to get the hang of it. Comedy dog sitting at the top of the stairs, just kind of. I'm upstairs, and there's comedy dog sitting at the top of the stairs, looking down the stairs, because he can't get downstairs because of his geometry. Not very tall, so long. He can get upstairs, but he would just tumble if you try to get down there. So I have to carry him downstairs. So he's sitting at the top of the stairs. A big fat cat's at the bottom of the stairs. Runs up the stairs, biffs the dog, and runs back downstairs again. The dog's going, what a madness!
Yeah.
The cat's enormously amusing. They do get on really well together.
Now, there's a market there. You know, you can get stair lifts for older people. Stair lifts for dogs?
Yes.
I think we should copyright that.
Yes, I think we should. I think he would benefit from some kind of machinery to enable him to get down the stairs again. If we could just teach him to hop on a platform and hit it with his nose, then he'd be fine.
Yeah.
But he'd probably find a way of misusing it, like he does everything else. Eats the cat's food, doesn't he? His own, all sorts of things.
Yeah.
He's loads of fun. They wouldn't be without him. He's lovely.
So how long's he been with you?
He's been with me. He's about 2.5, between 2 and 2.5 now. He's been with me, I suppose, 18 months now. I suppose. So, since he was little.
Yeah.
And when he was little, he kept getting a bit bigger, and then he stopped. And I thought, is he going to get any bigger? Oh, no, he's not. Okay. Yeah. So not very big now. So.
And sort of, now I've noticed there's a sort of divide in the dog world between those who sort of say mum or dad of themselves with their dog, and those who sort of use their first name or whatever, and the dog tends to think of them in their mind as the first name. Now, which would you fall into?
How do I refer to myself when I'm talking to the dog? Is what it comes down to.
You say, tell daddy make you dinner, or would you say?
Yeah, I would. Yes.
Yes.
I probably wouldn't use quite that tone of voice, but. Yes. Yes. What have you done with dad's slippers? Yes. I was just thinking about
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And I do also. I really. And this is a guilty pleasure here. All right. I do really like. And I have attempted to share this with some friends, and friends are like pointed and laughed. So what's the matter with you, man? I really like the LOL Cats and LOL Dogs website. Have you seen this? I'll. I'll send you the link.
Yeah.
I'll send you the link. But basically, they are cute pictures of cats and dogs on the two sites respectively, with funny captions that people have added. And they tend to be in kind of baby talk. So,
yeah.
And I just think they're really funny. But I have a weakness for lol cats and lol dogs. But I'll send you the link.
Brilliant, yeah. It's new to explore.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yes, you'll be on there all the time. You'll be sitting there looking at hundreds of pictures. Or you'll think, what's it? Poor enfeebled man. Finding this amusing.
See, but my thing is, I will cry. We'll be watching a film or a programme, you know, and people can be injured or killed or whatever, and I'm fine. And the dog will just get a thorn in its paw. I'm going, oh, look at the poor dog.
Yeah.
And have you seen Marley and Me?
I haven't, no.
It's a killer. If you've got a dog in your life that you love or you've ever loved a dog, that's a killer.
On the subject of podcasts, one of the podcasts I download every week is Simon Way and Mark Kermode's movie podcast from Five Live. It comes out every Friday. And he did Marley and Me. Now, Dr. Mark Kermode, is a distinguished film critic, dog lover, and deeply sentimental person. He's a big softie, basically, apart from his attachment to horror films. But he actually lambasted Marley and Me as sentimental porn. He said it amounted to sentiment porn. He really piled into it. So
that's interesting, because I read another interview, because I came out of it thinking, I'm not sure I actually enjoyed that.
Yes.
The first bit was great.
Yeah.
I cried, and I don't mean sort of the odd tear ran down. I mean, and I'm going to wail, you know?
Yeah.
And I read a review of it sort of saying, beware of showing this to your kids.
Yeah.
Because this is more a movie about death than about dogs.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought, you're right. You're absolutely right. And it's a funny one, because the book was good.
Yeah.
It was great. But the film upset me, I think, more than the book, maybe. I don't know.
Right.
But,
Not seen it. And may shy away from it, because, like you, I don't get, I don't go out of my way to get upset by this kind of thing.
No, don't. Saying yes, watch it. Saying oh no, don't. When it gets about 2/3 of the way through, do like Joey and Friends and put it in the freezer.
Oh right.
So just to finish, Jim.
Yeah.
You know, I think I know the answer to this, but would you say that Comedy Dog has enriched your life?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, apart from it, there's any number of ways. He's just a lovely, fun chap to have around. I look forward to going home because he's going to be there, seeing what havoc he's caused since I've been out. And one of the interesting things, when you go walking, I mean, I've just moved to a new place, right? Luckily, it's much nearer and a really good place to go and walk the dogs. The recreation field, recreation area. And I'm actually making friends in the area I've moved to with other dog walkers.
Brilliant.
Comedy Dog is making friends with their dogs as well, and I'm getting into conversation with them, and that's cool. So, he's enriched my life in so many ways. Wouldn't be without a little chat.
Yeah. Brilliant. Thanks ever so much, Jim.
That's all right. Thank you.
Comedy Dog sounds delightful, and you can see a photo of him on the Dogcast Radio site, where you'll also find links to Jim's diary page, Radio Shropshire, and the trainer who took both Jim and I through the Good Citizen Scheme. Exercise is not only fun for dogs. It strengthens heart, muscles and bones, and, of course, keeps them entertained. I'm a member of a forum on Imogen Holt's Work Wonders site, and one of the members has appealed for information about health in the Australian Terrier. You can hear Doreen Simpkins's Australian Terrier breed profile in episode 75 of Dogcast Radio. And now, Doreen has been put forward to sit on the Breed Health Working Group, and she's interested in collating information, research, etc., from as many different sources as possible. While there are not numerous health problems in Aussies, there does appear to be anecdotal evidence about a couple of health problems, and anything they can do to investigate how to minimise these would be welcome. If you have anything to contribute, you can get in touch with us here at Dogcast Radio or directly with Doreen at her website, haveahappyhound.co.uk. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288 0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 441-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
What do you call a sheepdog's tail that can tell tall stories? A shaggy dog's tail.